Hello and welcome to the Clever Tykes podcast, Creating Useful People. I'm Jodie Cook and today I'm joined by Charlotte Hodson. Charlotte is the co-founder of Awesome Merch, a custom print and merchandise company she set up in 2005 with her business partner Luke after they began university. Awesome Merch now employs over 100 people in two locations, Leeds in the United Kingdom and Austin, Texas, USA. The business started off producing one product and now produces over 650, and almost all of these are made in-house. Charlotte heads up the creative and marketing at Awesome Merch, and when she's not working, she's working out. Or, as she told me earlier, she's counteracting the benefits of working out by eating and drinking. She also spends her time writing and being an obsessive dog mom, in her words. I know Charlotte because we went to the same secondary school just a few years apart. It's incredibly inspiring to see just how much she's achieved since she left. So Charlotte, a big welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Can you take us right back to the start and talk to me about what you were like as a child?
I would say that probably doing what I do now, running a business, is not actually something that I would have seen myself doing when I was a child. I was always really creative and I was spent my days by myself thinking and writing and playing. So I wasn't one of those super entrepreneurial children that's having a million lemonade stalls and things like that.
Can you remember what you wanted to be when you were smaller?
I actually wanted to be an actor when I was really small, and then I wanted to be a writer, and then I wanted to be a race car driver, and then I went to university to do law, I did not want to be a lawyer. I just thought I better do something sensible because nobody pays writers. But then when we got there, Luke had bought a badge machine, at which I'd rolled my eyes, but was instantly roped in to work for free. So then just carried on from there. It kind of got a bit out of hand.
What were you like personality-wise as a kid?
Loud. I mean, I probably still am loud. Loud, fast talker, but also really introverted and spent all of my time reading books. I'm a walking contradiction, probably.
That's a very interesting mix. So you liked talking, but not...
Yeah, I love talking, but if I start reading a book and somebody tries to interrupt me, then I am not interested. I'm a bit of an opposites person.
Would you still describe yourself as introverted now?
My therapist thinks I'm introverted, but I think I can't be introverted. I think I'm still a walking contradiction.
Okay. Any other areas in which you are a walking contradiction?
I mean, everything I do. I always make sweeping statements about absolutely everything.
Did you used to do that when you were younger?
Yeah, I'd say so. I get carried away is probably the best description of me as a person. I throw myself into things, but I'm a bad perfectionist, which means I'm throwing myself into millions of things, but then I get paralysis and never finish one thing. So, and I was kind of like that at school as well. I feel like I didn't reach my full potential.
When you were growing up, what did your parents do for work?
My dad worked in weights and measures, which sounds very boring, and I think it kind of is. You know how the EU will have a litre? He'd go and audit places and say, oh yes, this factory definitely makes those glasses in litre size. That's correct. He used to travel quite a bit for work, but not super far afield, just mainly in Europe. And my mum was a stay-at-home mum until I was about 12. And then she just started working part-time.
So your dad being in weights and measures, do you remember being aware of that at the time?
No, but I kind of knew what he did, but it was really funny when we started getting weighing scales at work and he was very interested. He was like, oh, I know you've got to. I was always aware in that when we were in the supermarket, he'd be like, oh, well, that doesn't look like it's calibrated correctly. It's like, Dad, no one cares.
Did he talk about his work apart from that? Like when he was going off traveling, did you know what he was going to do?
No, not really. I think I was more interested in where he was going and how he was getting there and anything other than work that he was doing while he was there.
So weights and measures wasn't a field that you wanted to go into?
No, I wouldn't say it's a family business.
So when your parents talk to you about careers or school or like the future, do you remember any of those conversations?
Yeah, my parents are always actually, they were always really encouraging, except for when I wanted to be a race car driver. My dad said that girls weren't allowed to do that, which he denies nowadays. But I'm like, you said that to me. And I was very upset. They always encouraged me and said that you could do whatever you wanted. I think they were in equal parts happy and sad when I ditched English to do law at uni instead. I'd say my family were like solidly working class. And I was always conscious that all of the things that I wanted to pursue were maybe, it felt to me at the time like they were jobs that they didn't really pay me enough and I didn't have family money to fall back on as such. So then I, rightly or wrongly, thought to myself, well, I'd better go to uni and do something that ends up with me having a job that enables me to do all the other things I want to do with my life, like travel, etc. And I think they were really happy when I went and did law, but I think they were sort of sad that I didn't pursue my more creative outlets a bit further, because I think that was something that I really excelled at in school. And that was something as well that a lot of my teachers were really keen on me pursuing too. But it feels weirdly sad when you frame it like that. But that's what my thought process was at the time. Which is really interesting, because I don't know if it's actually a generational thing, because if it's, things are a lot different now if you're in high school now rather than very early 2000s. Like the landscape for work and what you get paid for, and in terms of being a content creator, it actually weirdly seems more viable with the democratization of media and the landscape. So I don't know if it would be something that would be different now if I was in that position again. I don't know if I'd actually look at how things are now and think that it was something that was viable for me to do and I would be able to support myself.
It sounds like you started off having super creative ambitions, like actor, writer, race car driver, sorry, and then going into the law degree and then almost like coming back around to run a business that's very creative. When you were on your law degree, were you aware at the time that that wasn't what you wanted to do for your future?
I think so, to some extent. I really enjoyed it and I think it was worthwhile in that way. But I think as I was going through uni and the business was progressing and I was still feeling a little bit directionless at the end of university, because I wanted to maybe be a prosecutor, but I had a friend whose mum was a prosecutor, and the way that she spoke about her mum and her mum's attitude towards work kind of put me off, which probably shouldn't let people's hearsay put you off, but I felt a bit directionless at the end of my degree, which I think actually is probably pretty common. So I feel like I sort of fell into working on the business full time with Luke, because he'd actually dropped out of uni the year before to concentrate on it full time.
You were talking about the prosecutor and how your friend was talking about her mum's attitude towards work and that put you off.
Yeah.
Can you remember specifically what was said?
It was about how basically her mum had gotten really bitter and had little faith in the justice system. And I just found that really demoralising. Like, my personality, and I kind of need to only focus on positive things, because negative things like bring me down probably more than a regular person. So I have to be relentlessly positive, which probably comes off as annoying sometimes.
I wonder if, had you really wanted to be a prosecutor, that wouldn't have put you off. I wonder if you perhaps maybe knew that you didn't actually want to be one.
I think so. I imagine that's probably the case. It's so interesting. Like, it was actually I actually loved doing the degree, because I find a lot of things interesting. I think that was my issue. And so it's hard for me to focus in on one thing, because I'm distractible and I get excited about so many things and I find so many things interesting that it was difficult for me to focus in on one thing. So it probably is right that I didn't truly want to do it. It was just one of my fleeting passions, maybe.
Yeah. Tell me about the journey from being roped into making badges with a badge machine to having a team of 100 people across two different continents. Well, firstly, how did you get roped in? And then how did you go from doing it on the side to actually making a career out of it?
Well, it started when, so Luke bought this handheld badge machine off eBay, and I was his girlfriend at the time, and we were going to uni together. And so every time we were hanging out, he was in a band when he was in Birmingham. So he would sell through MySpace and, like, do you remember, like, message forums, like Punktastic and stuff like that? So he'd get these orders, like small orders, and I'd just help him out, answer some emails, and then more orders came in, more emails came in. It just got a bit out of hand, got a bit carried away. The next thing, you know, we got an order for, you know, Bill Bailey, the comedian.
Yes.
We got an order of 80,000 badges for his tour. And that is a lot of badges to make on a handheld badge machine. So then it got to a stage when Luke had to buy a more expensive badge machine, which his dad kindly got a credit card out and we paid him back. So Luke was doing politics and law, and Luke quit uni to make badges, which his parents gave him some stick for at the time. And I just carried on working part-time while I was at uni. So I was working at Pizza Express as well, and then also reining in the emails, as we used to call it. And then because I was a bit directionless at the end, I was like, you know what, for the next year after uni, I'll work full-time with you and we'll see what happens. I sort of put a limit of a year on it, and then I was like, well, after a year, I'll figure out what I want to do with my life, and I'll do that. And then 13 years later, here I am.
And so do you remember the moment when you thought, actually, this is what I want to do, and this is my future career that I'm going to make for myself?
I feel like that point probably only came in the last couple of years, really, because it sounds crazy when you look at the scale of Awesome Merch as a business, but we kept growing organically and things were happening. And because we worked in the business every day on the business, we spent so much free time on the business as well. It was really all consuming, and you never really looked at it from an outside perspective. And my role, it was never really a role. It kind of evolved into a bunch of different things. I was doing a lot of finance stuff, which actually I do not enjoy, but I picked up because nobody else was picking it up, and there was all sorts of things like that. So I feel like it's only recently when I made active choices in what I was doing at work, if that makes sense, which sounds really silly when you own a business, because people are like, oh, you own a business, what do you do? Play golf? It's like, no, I don't play golf. I just have to go to work all the time.
Well, it's probably quite a nice way to be. If you can not make active decisions and still things go well and things be successful, that's probably a really nice just life to have.
Yeah, I think a few years ago, I think it was when we moved up a step to our new premises, because we were in this kind of industrial unit that was like a council run. It was like starter unit sort of thing. We started off with one small unit, and then we moved to a bigger unit, and then we moved to a double unit. And then we added an extra unit and then another one. And then in the end, we had 5 separate units in there, and it was out of hand. So then we moved to a proper industrial space, 10,000 square foot, bare factory. And then we filled it. We were like, oh, this factory will do us for 5 years. And then we must have filled it up within the first year. And it was a bit of an eye opener, like, oh, right. So then we got the factory next door, so with 20,000 square foot, and we've mezzanined out offices in there now. So we're at about 24,000 square foot in the UK, and it's full to bursting now. And sometimes when I'm back in the UK is when I notice it, when I go back in and I walk up the stairs to the upstairs offices and I look around and I just think, wow. You forget when you work so hard on something all the time, you forget to stop and look at it and go, oh, we just used to sit on the kitchen floor making badges, watching 24, like binge watching box sets and making badges by hand.
Have you still got the badge maker that you first had?
Yeah, of course we have. I think it's actually in Leeds Museum at the moment, because they did a little, entrepreneur thing, like businesses in Leeds and stuff like that. And so I think they've actually got the original badge machine and a little exhibit about Awesome Merch in there.
Oh, wow.
Which is really funny.
That's cool, being in a museum.
It's kind of cool, but also I'm like, we've only been going 13 years. How are we in a museum? I'm not that old.
You mentioned about needing to have relentless positivity around you and not wanting negativity. It's super common in entrepreneurs, isn't it? Like up and down, always feeling like it's either the best day ever, you've got this huge order, everything's amazing, or like, oh my God, it's the worst day ever. Like it's very hard to find. I find that it's very hard to have a middle ground.
Interestingly, I don't know if this is probably very inappropriate, but interestingly, I just got diagnosed a couple of months ago as like mild bipolar, which actually really explains everything in my life up to this point. I think so. I was always a real people pleaser, and I think the relentless positivity was another facet of that, really, because everybody loves being around someone who's really positive.
Yeah.
I don't mean glossing over negative things or ignoring them, but just always trying to look at the positives in a situation rather than dwelling on negative thoughts. I've always been pretty good at pulling things up and making sure we're, you know, always look on the, God, always look on, everything's so trite that I'm saying, isn't it? I'm about to say, I nearly said always look on the bright side of life, but,
oh my word. No, it's fine, because the feeling up and down thing is so common in entrepreneurs, and bipolar is so common in entrepreneurs. It's actually, we totally don't have to include it if you don't want to, but it's super refreshing to actually hear someone talk about it, because I think it's almost like being a comedian. Like, you almost have to be on all the time, and sometimes you might not want to be on, and that might not feel like the right thing to do at the time. So there's probably a lot of people who have exactly the same experience.
Yeah, I'm really good at masking as well, as in hiding how I feel, and I think that's why I always did it, because I can't cope with the downs, so I mask, and so I just have to be really relentlessly positive. I think if you let that negativity creep in, you'll end up just really hating what it's like to be an entrepreneur and to run a business, because there is so much, I think it's, there's so much uncertainty a lot of the time. So I think positivity is a way of coping with the uncertainty for me personally, probably.
When you first decided to get involved full time, did it feel like uncertainty then, or did it feel like a risk? Because if you said, I'm going to give this a year, was that maybe a way of managing the risk and managing the uncertainty for yourself?
I always think the way that the business happened is because it was straight out of uni, we didn't have to leave well-paid jobs to take a gamble on setting a business up or anything like that. We'd come from being skint students, so we had no real expectations in that regard. So I feel like it's an ideal time to set a business up, because you don't really need to be making money other than you're 21. You just need to kind of sustain yourself, make sure you can pay your rent, have a bit of beer money. The first year I still was relying on student loan. It didn't feel actually like as much of a risk as it would have felt, I think, later. But I guess putting a year on it, I think, was because I felt, oh, well, I've not made an active decision, I've just said, because I was already working in it, and I always joke about, I mean, I wasn't paid for about 2 years because we just couldn't afford to pay me, so I just worked for free. I mean, neither of us weren't getting paid for it, so I just think, I thought, why don't we just see where it goes with us both working on it full time.
So before Awesome Merch, did you have any entrepreneurial or like business owners just around you? Like, did you know of any when you were growing up?
No, I feel like I didn't really have any influences growing up in that way. I guess I always had like a weirdly entrepreneurial spirit. Like, it was more based on my desire to kind of earn money and pay my own way. So I was always like I started working as soon as I was legally allowed to. I was working at 15, and then I used to do things like buy a job lot of something and then split it out and then sell them all individually on eBay and things like that. I did it with loads of stuff. So I guess maybe I was my own role model. I mean, I consider myself like really creative. I'm like a real ideas person. I love ideas and I love running with them and getting carried away with them. So I don't know if it's another aspect of that, because sometimes it feels like that when we have a leadership catch up, like me, Luke and James, who's our MD now in the UK. We are terrible with our meetings. We are not very good at running a timely meeting. We go off on tangents and we get carried away with ideas. Rather than having entrepreneurial influences, it was being encouraged creatively, I think.
Yeah, definitely could have that. If there's a business need for it, then it's like a creative endeavour that accidentally becomes a business, but probably is more fun.
Mm.
Do you remember what were your favourite subjects at school?
Oh, yes, easy peasy, English, all day, every day.
At secondary school or primary school or both?
Oh, both. I loved reading and writing and language, everything. I loved it. English was my number one favourite. And I don't know if you Do you remember Expressive Arts?
Yes. Yes.
Oh my God. So that when they introduced that, I think my year was the first year that they introduced it. And that, oh my God, that was my perfect subject because you could, it was combining English. I mean, well, it was combining two different arts into, and all of your projects had to combine at least two arts, but it meant I could do writing but then combine it with something fun like a sculpture or another piece of art, which is, that was, I mean, if expressive arts was a job, that would be my dream job, just doing expressive arts GCSE all day every day.
I took that GCSE as well.
Did you love it?
I think I was overall confused by it. I remember seeing it on a list and thinking, I don't know what this is, but yeah, it might have English in it, so therefore it'll be good. But it was sort of a mix between English, art, drama, maybe a little bit, and then just almost like being a bit crazy in lessons. And then vaguely someone worked out a mark scheme for it and then gave you a mark, which is great.
Yeah, that was my dream subject. Just do whatever you want, have an idea, and then just go away and do the idea.
So you really rolled with it then?
Oh, I loved it.
What kind of things did you make and do in Expressive Arts?
Oh, probably my favourite thing was I wrote a poem about city life. Mr. Marston might still have this, actually. He loved it. I wrote a poem and then I made a mobile, and the different verses in the poem were on different parts of the mobile, which I loved. And then I also did like a weird sculpture. I wrote another poem. I used to love poetry. I mean, I still do love poetry. I wrote poetry all the time. I wrote this poem and then I did a mould of my own hand holding the poem and made a sculpture of it breaking through this mirror. I don't know where that went, but yeah, I loved it. It was the best subject ever. Did you have Mr. Marston still? Was he still teaching expressive arts when you did it?
Yep. Oh. Yeah, and I had him for English as well.
Oh yes, he was just the best teacher.
Well, it was Mr. Marston who suggested that I get in touch with you to interview you.
I can't believe that. I can't believe he remembers me. I'm really pleased he does, because he was my absolute favourite. He was just so encouraging.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about your parents and how they were very encouraging. Were they encouraging, like, on an academic side? And what are the types of things that they said to you about schoolwork, for example?
Yeah, they were very encouraging on an academic side. They were encouraging in terms of achievement rather than the effort required to achieve, which I was rewarded for the grades that I was getting, but not for the effort put in. I was never really told, hey, you should really work hard at that, even if you're good at it. It was like, oh, no, yeah, you've done well in that. Congrats. And I think that led to me, I feel like, resting on my laurels a little bit when it came to, when I got told, oh, you're really good at that, I just thought, oh, right, I'm really good at that, so I don't even need to try at it, which I think is definitely the wrong message and something that I even now I kind of struggle with as a belief about myself. I always was like, oh, I'm really good at that, so I shouldn't have to try, which led to me quitting things, I think, when I was younger, and I guess even when I got older, because I was like, well, if I'm not going to be the best at it, I'm not going to try, I'm not going to even pursue it. Which I feel like, especially from a standpoint of encouraging like an entrepreneurial spirit, that's the absolute opposite of what you want to do, really. Because I was going to say nobody's just automatically good at running a business, but actually Luke is, like, he was built for this. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like he's great at it. But I think in terms of encouraging entrepreneurship, I don't like the whole, oh, encourage people to fail, but I think we should be encouraging people to try.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think if we relate it to what you've said to me before about grades in schools and how you get an A, a B, a C, or a D for achievement, and then you get a 1 or 2 or a 3 or a 4 for effort.
Yeah, when I was in school, my aim was to get A4s, which is ridiculous. Why do I want to not work at something but still be good at it? That's not how life should be. I think because I was just encouraged in some areas, that I had some classes like that where I was getting these stupid grades. I feel like they shouldn't give you an A if you're getting a 3 or 4 for effort. Mm-hmm. They should be like, no, you still need to try. Just because you're good at it, you could be even better.
And so were you an A4 student?
I was an A3 student. I don't think I ever achieved an A4.
I mean, how do you go from an A3 to an A4? Just fall asleep in class?
I don't know. I mean, I was an A4. I was not an A3 student across the board by a long stretch as well. That was, I'm talking like sometimes in English, because sometimes I would just be, I think not when I had Mr. Marston and Mr. Hole, but I had some teachers that didn't like my style of, I don't know, maybe my personality. Maybe I just grated on them and they were like, put in some more effort. And I was like, well, I am putting effort in. Maybe it just doesn't look like effort to you. Maybe it just didn't look like effort.
Yeah. Did you disrupt other kids?
No, I don't think so. I was a pretty good student, really. I was like, I was loud and I participated, but I wouldn't say I was the troublemaker. I go along with things. I'm not the instigator.
So when you got your A3, for example, did that make you feel like you wanted to try harder?
No, that's the thing. I think it's because my parents as well didn't say, oh, just because you're good at something doesn't mean you shouldn't put effort in and practice and things like that. I think it was when I was younger, there was like a few things that I did where people would say, oh, you're really talented at that. And I think now I'm older, I realise that talent only really gets you so far. You can't just be a talented kid when you're a 30-year-old. You have to actually work at that and improve and get better, because otherwise there's people who were equally or less talented who did put that effort in, carried on with it when you ditched it off to go drinking and partying.
Yeah.
And now they're light years ahead of where you hoped you could be, or where you never realised you could get to because you didn't put the effort in and you didn't realise how much you could achieve if you applied yourself.
You always need, like, the greatest tool for careers in secondary schools would be a time machine, because if you showed someone, if they carried on doing what they were doing right now, where they'd be in the future, that would probably be like the sharp reality that would put someone into actually making an effort. Because you could probably think of some in your year, but definitely in my year, the kids who were like the naughty kids, they could have been so good. They probably had so much more talent. And it's such a shame that because what they wanted to do was just, I don't know, take drugs and get involved in like bad crowds or just not really bother. They've pretty much foregone their future just from that decision.
Yeah, it's a shame, because I think when you think back on it, when I think back on it as well, the quote unquote naughty kids, bad kids or whatever, they weren't actually bad. Most of them were really nice, and they just weren't maybe encouraged in the right way or spoken to in the right way. I think, I guess at our school as well, there's an expectation that you're at a certain level and you fit a certain mold maybe. So I think if you're a little bit outside of that, maybe you're not as bright, or maybe you just, the way that you learn, your style of learning is different to the kind of regular way that things were taught back then. I mean, I've never been to school for years, obviously. I think you got a little bit neglected maybe, or just put into the, oh no, they're no point wasting effort on them as a pupil because they're not interested, when maybe it's just maybe at home they weren't encouraged. So at school, they didn't see any value in putting in any effort.
Well, I think at Five Ways, especially because it was a free school, you got people from all different backgrounds, which was great. But then because you took an 11 plus to get in, that was essentially an IQ test. Yeah. And so like you're reminded constantly that you are the top, whatever percent it was in the country to even be at that school. But then I feel like if they hadn't scored people on IQ, if they'd actually scored people on like resilience and effort and everything else, it would be a completely different set of people there.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting thinking about it like that. Resilience, that's a nice measure.
If you looked back at your former self going through primary school, going through secondary school, would you have any words of advice to them?
Oh God, put the work in. I don't really ever regret anything, but I do think some of the things that I wish I would love to be doing right now, I just think if I'd put that effort in when I was younger and stuck with more things, that sounds shitty, put the work in, but
no, it's
I feel like I can't think of a better way to phrase it. I guess ask for help, I think, is a really big one for me. Because I was like, oh, I'm smart, I can figure this out, I'll figure this out by myself. And I refused to ask for help. And no one thinks you're stupid if you ask for help. People think you're stupid if you don't ask for help. I think when you're good at doing something, you just forget, and you forget that people don't, your self-image is not what people see of you. So I'd always refused to ask for help. And I was really bad at receiving criticism. And I think those two things are things that, if I was looking back when I was younger, if I could tell myself something, it would be just ask for help and be way more open to criticism. I think, I'm not saying all criticism, obviously, but constructive criticism. I think I was like, no, I've done this right. Of course I've done this right. You told me how great I am. How didn't I do it right? I think that's probably what led me to quit things and not start things, because I didn't want to fail at something that I took pride in.
Mm-hmm. Since then, are there certain areas of your work and life that you've purposefully worked on? So maybe, like you mentioned, starting things and not finishing things. Is that something that you like actively address and try and do now?
I do. I'm still very much like that, which is a pain to say the least, but I am trying to harness it a little bit better. I was a real control freak, and I was really bad at relinquishing control to people in the business, because I was like, well, I better do it. And then I'm getting a lot better at that. I'm actively, like, my job is not to do every single job in the business. So I'm actively getting a lot better at delegating it. That's something that when I'm at work every day, I think, do I need to be doing this? And if I don't need to be doing this, who does need to be doing this? And I actively try and do that now. Communication actually is a really big thing for me, because I think when I was growing up, maybe because of the people pleasing and that sort of thing and trying to be perfect, I wouldn't communicate how I was feeling about things, and probably relates to not being able to ask for help. So I think something that I actively work on every single day at work is, because I was such a bad communicator, over communicating, like really trying to over communicate with everyone that I'm working with, and constantly asking for like feedback from people who I'm managing as well as people like Luke and James in the leadership team. I'm trying to encourage that in other people as well, because I did it a lot myself, not asking for help. I can notice that quite easily in other people. I should just take my own advice more.
What kind of manager are you now?
People management is probably not my forte. I'm good with a small team. I couldn't manage a team of 30, 40 people. We've got really good managers in, though, now. We've had a bit of a turbulent 12 to 18 months in that regard. But I'm very encouraging, I think. I like to give people a bit of creativity and a bit of free rein to do their own thing and make an impact, because that's something that's really important to me. And I think that's something that I want to encourage in my team and the people that I work with. And like I said, I'm very over communicative now, but I'm trying to embrace that.
If you hadn't started a business with Luke when you were at university, what would you be doing now?
Oh God, it sounds crazy, but I've absolutely no idea. I like to imagine I'd be a writer. I think I would have done okay at a law firm. If I'd found the right fit, I think I could have done well, because law is kind of creative, because I mean, it's all within working within a framework, but you can get really creative with it. I know this sounds really silly as well. I try not to think about it. I like to look back and learn from things, but I also like not to think what if, because I just think that can be really paralyzing as well, because maybe I would have done something different. But I've actually, this business is really exciting. It's been a really great journey. I've had loads of really interesting opportunities. I've worked with loads of great people. We're at a really exciting stage now. So I just think, I don't want to look back and be wishing I'd done something else when I'm in such a fantastic position now.
And that's probably exactly why it's totally right to not regret anything or just think everything happened for a reason, because every decision you ever made led up to where you are now, which you're really happy with. So it's like the butterfly effect, isn't it? Doing one thing differently could have led you down such a different path, which you might not be as happy with.
Sorry if that sounds a little bit trite as well.
But... No, not at all. So have you got any like mantras, or this is going to, like, if you thought you sounded cheesy before, you definitely will with this question, but have you got any like mantras or affirmations or anything that you regularly say to yourself?
Interestingly, no, but I should have. One of the things I struggle with is I have really bad negative self-talk. That's something I'm working on changing at the moment. So I probably should have a really nice mantra. Oh God, this is so cheesy. I changed the alarm on my phone. So when I wake up and I read my alarm, it says, be kind to yourself.
Oh, that's nice. That's really nice.
You know that, what's that? Who said how we spend our days is how we spend our lives? I can't remember who said it, but I think I'm just a big fan of one day at a time at the moment.
Something I saw on Twitter yesterday was a lady whose elderly mother has dementia. And she'd got a whiteboard and she'd left it in her sight in her sitting room. So it helped reduce constant anxious phone calls to her. And on the whiteboard, it said, your meals are paid for. You're okay. Everyone's fine. You are not moving. No one else is moving. Keep drinking water. It will help your memory. You don't owe anyone any money and you haven't upset anyone.
Oh, I love that.
It's really nice. But what it was making me think is that would be so helpful for her elderly mom whenever she thought, I'm worried about something. She would have looked at that and thought, okay, that's okay. But then everyone could almost do with a whiteboard that they have in front of them. That's the first thing they see every morning, which has got like five different, you know, you're okay, you can be kind to yourself, everything's good. Like that kind of message. I think that would probably be beneficial for everyone.
Yeah, I'm just full of cliches today. I was going to say, I couldn't say it better myself. But yeah.
I think be kind to yourself would be a really nice one.
Yeah. I think everyone could do that in their life. There's actually this one, there's a quote I've got on my desktop. Oh, it's from like a philosopher that I can't pronounce the name of, which is really bad, isn't it? Epictetus,
yes. He's one of the Stoics.
Yes. I think it was in Luke's Daily Stoic. I don't know if you've got that book. It's like a 365 meditations.
Yes.
And it's just, how long are you going to wait before you demand the best for yourself?
Yes, nice.
So I have that as the background of my computer. And I think that's kind of just another way of saying be kind to yourself. Give yourself a break.
Do you follow Stoicism?
Very light touch. Luke absolutely is head over heels. He reads a lot about Stoicism, and he's thoroughly into it. And he is actually, because it's true, you can't control anything other than your own reaction to it. And I think as a reforming control freak, that's something that I need to start remembering.
Yeah, it's amazing as a working, like no one's ever a Stoic or a sage, but everyone's like practicing it all the time. And if you try and practice it, you're really good at it kind of 90% of the time, and then you yell at someone who, I don't know, cuts in front of you in their car, it doesn't mean you like go back a step. It just means that you need to think about, okay, why did it make me react in that way, and then be better prepared for it the next time.
Yeah, I like that. It's like a practice, kind of like when they say yoga's a practice. You can't be perfect all the time. It's just tiny, tiny improvements.
Do you remember being a control freak when you were when you were little?
Yeah, I like everything to be done my way. I think because I'm a control freak, that's why I struggled to delegate and manage initially at work, because I just couldn't get away from the fact that, like, oh, what if somebody does it differently to me? It needs to be done my exact way. I mean, working in finance as well, being a control freak is the worst, because sometimes I'd be there for an hour reconciling, looking for 31p, and it's like, well, that's not time and money efficient. That's a waste of money. You get paid more than 31p an hour. You need to write that off. But my personality wouldn't let myself. I was like, I can't do it, which is why it's really good that somebody else does that now instead of me.
Yeah. And so did you have it in things like, did your room always have to be tidy? Did you like things in right angles? What was the relationship like between like you and your little sister?
So we got on most of the time, but we weren't close. I always had this thing. Oh, that she'll. I hope she doesn't listen to this.
She's definitely going to listen to this.
I always had this thing that she would always like copy me. And I found that really frustrating because I just felt like I'm making myself up. I'm being my own person. You need to be your own person too. Don't copy someone. Don't imitate someone. Don't try and be someone else. I think that's why, you know, when people ask you, like, who do you look up to? Who inspires you? And I always really struggle with that question because I walk a tightrope between inspiration and comparison. So I try to almost actively avoid like having a role model, mm-hmm. as it were, mm-hmm. in case it tips me into comparison rather than giving me inspiration.
Because it would be so easy to take it maybe too far and then forget who you were yourself because you were following someone else's path a little bit.
Yeah. And comparing everything that I was doing. And like when people say success doesn't have a timeline. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important to remember because I guess people probably think we're successful. And I guess I am still relatively young. But then I still feel like, oh, no, I should have done this sooner. We should have done this 2 years ago. We should have done this 3 years ago. So I think that's where I always struggle with that.
How do you define success?
Definitely not money and things is what I've learned. Happiness and freedom and the space to be yourself is how I would define success.
When you were younger, do you remember how you defined success then? Or if you were thinking about what your future self would be doing, do you remember thinking about what success looked like then?
Back then, success was still very much linked to not necessarily money in terms of, oh, they've got a really well-paid job, but, oh, they're a writer and, oh, they've won the Man Booker Prize, they've won a Pulitzer. It was about the kind of tangible achievements rather than they've written 10 books. Isn't that amazing? Now I've realized that it's not, you shouldn't measure it in those kind of tangible awards. Well, not as your sole measure, I wouldn't say. Because I think a lot of the time, sometimes at work, like we've never really won, we've like won a handful of like little awards and things like that. But there's a lot of kind of big awards in the printing industry that are pay to play. So we've just sort of ignored that sort of thing because it's just a kind of a distraction from our mission, if you will. When I was younger, I still was very consumed with the tangible aspects of it, the awards, the achievement part rather than the effort part. Again, is what it comes down to.
So it's kind of come full circle then. It's not just focusing on the achievement at the expense of the effort or maybe doing stuff that doesn't align with your mission. Like now it's like the effort and then the achievement that just kind of comes off the back of it without just going looking for the achievement maybe. Because
yeah, that sums it up perfectly really.
It'd be nice to see out of all the companies in the world, how many are there that aren't doing the best job they can but are winning loads of awards, and how many are there that have never won a notable award but are doing a really great job and delighting their customers.
I would absolutely love to see that. We talk about it sometimes at work when they ask us to enter an award and they're like, oh, it costs £15,000 to enter and you'll pretty much win it. And it's like, well, like, I'll just invent my own awards. That's not how awards work.
Have you got any final words of wisdom? Or I was almost going to say, like, if you had a 13-year-old Charlotte in front of you, what's the stuff that you would say to them right now? But we've actually answered that, haven't we, already, because of the put the effort in thing.
What I would do as well is I'd really encourage them to embrace, like, try and notice who they are, how they feel, and to run with that rather than thinking about what other people expect you to be or want you to be. That's what I would be I think if I had a 13-year-old right now, thank God I don't.
advice to your former self then.
Yeah, definitely advice to my former self.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for joining me. Where can people find out more about you and about Awesome Merch?
Well, about me, nowhere, because I keep myself well hidden. But about Awesome Merch, I guess we've got two websites now, awesomemerchandise.com and awesomemerch.com. The awesomemerch.com is the new US website, which is way more limited than the UK one. But there's a little snippet about our story on there. And there is also cute pictures of Dolly.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Charlotte.
Thank you so much for having me.
This episode was brought to you by Clever Tykes Children's Storybooks. If you want to support the podcast and help share our ethos of inspiring, enterprising behaviour, head over to clevertykes.com and order a set of the storybooks to give to a child that you know.